We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Iron Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell, as always. I'm here with Jason Pat. The Bulls are 9-14 overall. They are in what is probably the toughest stretch of their year. They've lost three of their last four games, one of those to the Knicks, one of those to the Magic, one of those to the Washington Wizards. So Bulls drop in some very winnable games. This was supposed to be the easy part on the schedule when they could maybe get back into the playoff picture. Instead, the Bulls sit here today, 9-14. If the season ended right now, they'd be in fifth place in the lottery. They're currently tracking to be under on their Vegas over-under in terms of their win total on the season, which I think was around 40% of their games. And they have a lot of weird injuries starting to pile up, Jason. And I think that that's really become the theme of the team over the last week.
Yep. And I mean, the theme of the team over the last few years is just like, here we go again. We had, obviously, it was what, a week or two ago, Wendell went down with his quad injury after running in the Denzel Valentine practice. Now we have Lowry's out 2 to 4 weeks because in that first Magic game, I think it was the first Magic game, yes, on a simple drive to the basket, his shoulder went into, I think it was Gary Clark, and he hurt his shoulder. Now he's out 2 to 4 weeks. It looked like it's such a whatever play, an innocent play, and he's now could be out for a month. We have Otto Porter Jr. Nobody knows what's going on with his back injury. It kind of flared up recently, and then he tried to play through it. Now they're just kind of shutting him down. He's not doing that much activity. So he's out for God knows how long. We saw that happen last year with this foot injury, which we didn't think was going to be that bad. And it turned out he was out for 4 months. So that's not helpful. Chandler Hutchinson is out for, they said, personal reasons yesterday. Billy Donovan gave a really long answer about Hutchinson. They had these conversations and they basically just agreed that he's not going to be playing. I don't want to speculate too much about any of that. Could it be COVID related? He did test positive earlier this season. Is he having reservations about playing? Is he upset about not being in the rotation? I have no idea. Like I said, I don't want to go too deep into it. So now, they're missing all these rotation guys. So we got a game last night against the Wizards where they're starting Denzel Valentine, who's also started in that second Magic game, which they did win by a lot, but they're starting Denzel Valentine. We're getting Cristiano Felicio minutes in the fourth quarter. We're getting Ryan Arcidiacono guarding Bradley Beal in the fourth quarter. Just an absolutely awful basketball game against the Wizards last night. Made even worse by the fact that I was I signed up for DraftKings after the Super Bowl, after I won some money on the Super Bowl, and got a nice free referral. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think the Bulls are going to win this game against the Wizards tomorrow. And then, they blow it and lost all that referral money. But just watching the game in general, it was just brutal. Zach had 35, but melted down the stretch. 2 of 11 in the fourth quarter. He missed that last layup. Good no call, I think, on that last play on Alex Len. The NBA confirmed that today at the last two-minute report. And there was just a lot of goofiness. I tweeted this late last night after the game. It was just kind of all the last couple years, just bad Bulls basketball. Just kind of coming back and just all happening in one game, minus there being a big boob on the sideline, Jim Boylan. Like, Zach LaVine carrying them, but then kind of melting down the stretch. Again, the Felicio minutes, where Felicio had one play where he tried to post up. I think it was Robin Lopez, and just straight up lost the ball out of bounds. You had Denzel chucking up a bunch of shots. Kobe White was awful. Kobe White was pulled 2 minutes into the third quarter because he got bullied by Raul Neto on a drive to the basket. I mean, Raul Neto bullying guys? Like, he's like 6 feet tall and like 150 pounds, soaking wet. Like, are you kidding me?
Kobe
is
the smallest 6'4 guard I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, like, unbelievable. So just like all the, and just, it was just so bad. And to lose to that Wizards team, which is also, I mean, they're the second worst team in the league. They did have Beal, obviously, at 35. But I didn't even think Beal was that good yesterday. Like, he only was 1 of 5 from three. He had some bad plays down the stretch. He missed a clutch free throw. Robin Lopez is committing offensive fouls all over the place. They have like Garrison Matthews chucking terrible threes, and Rui Hachimura was really good yesterday. But like, just in general, like, it was just brutal to watch. Just very reminiscent of games we've watched in the past few years, with the starting front court is out, and you're counting on Zach to just basically save your ass all the time. And now they just have a better coach there, and now they're going to be without Wendell and Lowry for a couple more weeks now at the very least, and we're going to be playing these bad lineups with the end of their, I mean, are we going to see more Felicio minutes? Is he going to dust off Luke Kornet? Like, it's pretty brutal right now. Like I said, they're 9-14. They got some tough games coming up. The Pelicans are playing a bit better Wednesday. I think they play the Clippers Friday. They got the Pacers coming up again. I know the Pacers are struggling, but they're still pretty decent. So just like, it is kind of, our guy Matt at Bloggable today wrote a thing where it's like, are we back in another situation where it's like, this season is miserable again now, and like, it's going to be awful to watch them. Like, I really hope not, because the beginning of this year did bring some positive stuff, and like, they were pretty fun to watch. But now, with guys injured and some of the lineups that they have to play, like, it was just really hard watching that Wizards game last night. And then, I mean, the first Magic game, like, the Magic are even more shorthanded than the Bulls, and for the Bulls to give up 123 to that offense and lose that game was brutal. I know they won the next game by like 30, but like, I mean, the Magic are terrible. Like, you should be beating the Magic. So to split that series, to split the Knicks one, and then to lose this Wizards game last night, just really, really, really tough.
Yeah, it seems like the entire season has fallen apart in the matter of a week. And I was honestly already like somewhat expecting this, just because it's hard to watch these games. And while they were like enjoyable, and like, finally I felt like there was a team that wasn't just totally embarrassing, I did I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? And I thought that was going to be via trade. We shouldn't be surprised that a lot of these guys are hurt. Like, Lowry seems to get hurt every year. Carter, it's another like freak injury, right? Denzel Valentine runs into him in practice, and now he's sidelined for a month at the worst possible time. And Otto Porter, the oldest 27-year-old ever, just hurt again. Like, he was actually having a pretty good season. Yeah. He's been shooting 40% from three this year. He was a key reason why the bench kept saving the starters' ass for the majority of the season. But we shouldn't really be too surprised that like this is how the season's played out. Like you said, it seems like it plays out this way every year. I was always just sort of waiting for them to trade the veterans, whether it's Thad Young or Otto, for them to really collapse. The trade deadline isn't for, I think it's like March 25th.
March 25th.
Yeah. So it's like pretty late in the season in terms of the percentage of games this year, I feel like. But this Bulls collapse has happened very swiftly. And already, they're not that many games out of a playoff spot. I don't have
right. I mean, the East is so shitty. Look at the Eastern Conference standings. Like, it's awful. There's the fifth place team is the Pacers, and they're 500. They're the five seed right now. So, like, the Cavs are free falling. Like, you look at the teams ahead of them. It's like the Hawks are okay. The Knicks, I mean, the Knicks and Bulls, I feel like, are just very similar, probably mostly equally matched. The Knicks did just trade for Derrick Rose for another Tom Thibodeau reunion. But yeah, I mean, the Bulls, unless they like really, really fall apart, which, I mean, maybe they could with these injuries, if they do trade guys, maybe they do just really fall apart. But even though, like, I still think they can be in this mix for this play-in spot, like, even if they are like bad, like, because I feel like the 10 seed is going to be really terrible. I think the Heat will probably come around a bit more. But like, are the Knicks going to keep it up? I don't know. Like, the Cavs, like I said, the Cavs are free falling. I think the Raptors have finally picked it up again. But again, I think this fight for like the 10 seed is going to be like, the team could be like 10 to 15 games under 500 and possibly have a chance at that 10 seed. So like, the Bulls might still kind of be in the spot for the play-in tournament, like, even if they do fall apart, which, because the East just stinks.
For sure. But right, like, you got to think Miami's going to be better, right? Like,
I would
Miami's
think so.
Also 9-14 right now. The Raptors were at the bottom of the standings
they
for
finally
a while.
Figured it out.
Yeah, they are starting to win a little bit more. They're 6-4 in their last 10. They're the 8th seed right now. So, dude, part of me is already like back in draft mode. It's like, yeah, this looks like a good draft. Right now, like I said, they'd be 5th in the lottery standings. So there definitely have been some positives to take away from this year already. And I don't want to act like the season's over already, but you know, I do think it should be time to start focusing on the bigger picture in a sense. Like, they got to try to find a landing spot for Thad Young. I think he's had an amazing year. He can be really helpful to a playoff team. It'd be great if the Bulls could get an asset back for that. And then, you know, Lowry's the other guy I think of too. It's like, he's going to be a restricted free agent. You can make a pretty easy case that the team is better without him on the floor. There's been all these rumors tying the Bulls to Lonzo Ball in the Pelicans, and you can go into that a little bit more if you want to, but Lowry seems like a natural fit there just because the Pelicans have, I think, the least shooting of any team in the league. They're starting Steven Adams, Zion, you know, Lonzo, and Eric Bledsoe in their starting lineup, so they could desperately use a stretch big man in the front court. And, you know, to me, I think that It's time to start thinking about the bigger picture, and I want to see Karnišovas actually put his imprint on this team, because to this point, it's basically still a Garpax team. I mean, we're having to watch Ryan Arcidiacono, Denzel, and Felicio on the court in the fourth quarter yesterday against the Wizards. What you said about this being like a microcosm of the last few years is dead on, and that hasn't been the vibe of the season up until this point. This week it just all fell apart, and that's what happens when Otto Porter's back flares up and Lowry, you know, gets hurt as he does every year. It's unfortunate because the Bulls have been really fun to watch, and I thought this was the easiest portion of the schedule where they could like sort of make things interesting. But I don't know. Now at this point, I'm already like flipping the switch. They're like, okay, Karnišovas, like do something here, buddy.
Right. Like, if you look at the record, like, I mean, the record's bad. It's, I think, 9-14. If you look at like their point differential, though, it's like it's not that bad. Blowing out the Magic really helped there, but like they've been in a lot of close games. They've been mostly competitive against really good teams. I mean, they've gotten smashed lately, like the Lakers and Celtics beat their ass. They've been mostly close to these games, and they've just really struggled in these late games. And our guy, we always shout them out every week. Stefan Noh wrote something today about the Bulls struggling late in games to finish out some of these close games. And he talked about, he looked through like a lot of Zach's. I don't want to be too hard on Zach. I mean, Zach does so much for this team. He's having a great year, but he has struggled late in some of these games with some of his shot selection and just not hitting clutch shots. We saw it last night. He, like I mentioned, 2 of 11 in the fourth. He missed that last layup where I'm not really sure what he was trying to do. I mean, he's shooting like 70% at the rim this year, and he misses a gimme layup. I know Len contested it pretty well, but like that's a shot Zach makes 70 to 75% of the time. He just totally biffed it, took some other really just bad shots, and he missed some real like bad. Like he took a three in the fourth yesterday, that nothing but backboard. There was another mid-range shot that was you could tell it was not even close right off the hands, and that was after he was hot all game. And I feel like that happens just a decent amount where he's just like cruising all game where he looks great, and then just in the fourth quarter. And that, I mean, that's been one of his bugaboos for his career, and that one of the reasons why probably Zach LaVine as like your number one, you're just not going to be like that great because he still has issues with late in games and decision making. That was just part of the thing with that Stefan was talking about, to some of the issues in their close games that they haven't been able to execute well enough. And we saw it again last night against the Wizards. It would just be nice to maybe diversify the offense a bit, not always just Billy Donovan also brought it up. Sometimes they just go into watch Zach try to play hero mode, and that doesn't work all the time. We've seen other times this season where they have had some nice ball movement. I can't remember what game it was where they won, where they had some really nice ball movement. Lori hit a late three. I think that was against the Knicks. I think the first Knicks game, they got some nice ball movement for a Kobe White three. Was it Lowry hit a dagger earlier this year off some nice ball movement? So, like, they've done it before. That just doesn't happen enough. So, like, they've been mostly competitive outside of a few games against some of these good teams. But so when you're 9-14 and with these injuries and with the schedule coming up, it definitely does look like we're starting to stare down at a situation where that bigger picture should come in, or that should be the focus. So let's talk about some bigger picture stuff. As part of we sent out on Twitter yesterday a call for just Twitter questions. We haven't really done this in a while, to get fans asking us stuff about the Bulls and our questions. And naturally, a lot of them are about the bigger picture and where the Bulls should go from here. So let's start going through some of these questions. Naturally, a lot of them were about Kobe White. So I was going to start with Kobe White. I know my guy at Riles, I think it's 23, asked just why is Kobe White bad. We had somebody else ask, just where do they go? Like, what should the Bulls do in terms of starting him? Should they keep starting him? Should they bench him? Should somebody else also ask, should Tomas Satoransky start? Or did somebody else ask, should Dotson get minutes? Dotson is currently playing in the G League with the Canton Charge in that bubble. The Bulls did not send a team there, so he's not even with like the Bulls' own G League team because they're not even playing. But should they give him a shot and bring him minutes with them? With, like, the Archie Diacono stuff, like, no, we don't need that much anymore. Like, Sato's been pretty nice off the bench. We've kind of seen him be the starter at point guard before, but Kobe's just been so bad. It's incredible. So, like, Ricky, why has Kobe White struggled so much? How much more leash are you willing to give him? And where do they go from here with Kobe White?
Yeah, I think at this point, Kobe just needs to figure out one thing he's good at, and that should be shooting. I think playing off the ball instead of on the ball would be sort of the key to unlocking that. And we all knew that this was going to be one of the biggest problems in the season, right? Like, going into the year, if your starting point guard is 20 years old, it's probably going to be a rough adjustment to the league. And Kobe wasn't – it was a pretty big shift in responsibilities for Kobe. Last year, coming off the bench pretty much the entire season, he was sort of just used as a microwave scorer. This year, trying to tap into his point guard ability, and obviously he struggled. And it's just – brutal to watch him try to read the floor and just like miss basic reads, having no ability to change gears, I think really hampers him. His inability to get to the foul line or to put pressure on the rim. It's tough to watch, dude. And it's been like the one area of the team where if you could give them a competent point guard, the team would be like pretty good, I think. But instead, Kobe is playing at one of the worst levels in the entire league. If you look at the Raptor stats on 538, which is basically Raptor War, it gives you an all-in-one number to sort of capture impact on the game. And Kobe was among the 12 worst players in the league the last time I checked those stats a week or so ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's been absolutely brutal. But in a lot of ways, I don't totally mind him starting just because – I do think it's good to have him out there on the floor. I think that, like, I don't want to totally write him off as a player because I think there are some things he does well. But the way the Bulls are trying to make him a point guard, or at least, like, you know, seeing if he can handle that level of responsibility, I think it's pretty clear that he is, like, years away from being a competent NBA floor general. Like, that's not going to be in the cards right now. But, you know, he's still shooting decent. His shooting is falling down, but he's at 35%. Obviously, he's got to be a catch-and-shoot guy. He's got to be someone who's, like, hitting transition threes, who, you know, is just playing with a high three-point rate. And watching the league this whole year, I feel like the three-point rate kind of overwhelms everything else. And he's a guy with a 47% three-point rate. So, you know, he's taken a three on almost half of his possessions. You just need someone who has that quick trigger and who can get up three-point attempts. So I do think he's still valuable, and I wouldn't hesitate to move off of him, certainly, if, another team was going to value him in a trade. I would think, you know, for sure, maybe he still has some value league-wide because he was a top 10 pick, because he's only 20 years old, because he does go on these scoring outbursts. But in general, obviously, it's been a gigantic disappointment for him in his second season. So where do you fall on start him versus move him to the bench?
I think I'm still fine to starting him. I mentioned Sato, and I think Sato's been a nice bench guy. I think, and just in general, he's a solid bench player. He's smart. He can break down a defense okay, like when you're going against lesser guys. He's a decent shooter. He's a good passer. Like, a nice guy to run your second unit. I just feel like we saw what happened with against as a starter, and just was not good either. He wasn't terrible, but he was also disappointing last year. You say what you want. Maybe part of that was Boylan. Maybe in the system he'd be a little bit better, and maybe you do want to try that in order to win games. Because we'll talk about this in a bit. This was another one of the questions. Like, just the playing the young core versus like the bet heavy bench has been such a disparity in net rating. There was a stat, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, just like showing just how just the massive differential between like the starters and the bench. I mean, and that's been obvious all year. We've seen that. But I'm still kind of fine, especially now. You might as well just keep playing Kobe. Like, I don't really know. Like, I guess if they do make a move, I guess, like, maybe then you move him to the bench. Like, if they do trade for Lonzo Ball, again, we'll talk about that in a little bit here as well. I would probably start Lonzo and move Kobe to the bench and have him be the sixth man and kind of let him cook in that role again. You give him some playmaking opportunities, but mostly in that off-ball role. I would probably do that. But for right now, like with the roster as it is now, I probably would play, just keep starting Kobe, keep bringing Sad off the bench. I wouldn't mind maybe giving Dotson a chance. As I kind of mentioned, that was from who said that? He said this was from Felipe. I'm not sure how to say his last name. Thank you for the question. He just asked why no Dotson. We're going nowhere. He should be playing. And like part of me says, yeah, like why not give him a shot? Like I'd rather throw Dotson out there for a few minutes than play Arch for eight. Like I think Arch played 5 or 6 minutes, maybe more than yesterday. I don't think he recorded a single set. Again, he tried to guard that Bradley Beal. It was a failure. Arch is like best quality. I know he tries hard. And like I don't want to like rip him too much because he's made a nice little career for himself. But like his like best attribute at this point is doing funny like play like celebrations on the bench at this point. I think our guy Cody Westerlund pointed that out. But why not give Dotson a chance? Still ride with Kobe. I would like possibly think. Like, I don't even know about trading Kobe. If you looked at doing something like that, like I don't know. I don't know if his value is that high. Like he is only in the second year. He's still so young. Teams might still like think that they could. I mean, I guess he does have value because he can shoot. Like when he's playing off the ball, you just see how much more comfortable he is. It's just on the ball, he's just not strong with the ball. His handle's loose, and then the defense too. I mentioned the Raul Nita thing. Kobe and Zach is probably the worst starting defensive backcourt in the NBA. Just totally terrible. So like, it's brutal. I think that's one of the other reasons. I guess we'll use that as a way to transition to the Lonzo Ball thing. Like, should the Bulls really be going hard after Lonzo? And we got Lonzo and the Pelicans coming to town. Anthony asked this at Mr. Anthony_P. Should the Bulls be all in on getting Lonzo? Who should be the primary pieces to trade? Because I think the fit in general like is intriguing with Lonzo and Zach. We know they could use some defensive help there. Just on the perimeter. Lonzo has been playing a lot better lately. At least he's shooting better. I think he's up to like 35-36% from three after a really brutal start. We know he has his flaws in terms of he does nothing inside the arc, basically. His half-court stuff is not great. He's great passer still, good in transition, but like, in terms of like breaking down a defense, getting to the line, like that was Chris Dunn's problem as well. He rarely got to the line, not very good inside the arc, but if Lonzo's three-point shooting is back and it stays back on that pretty high volume and he can play defense and then just being a smart passer in this Bulls system where they do play a bit more up-tempo, I feel like you could possibly leverage Lonzo's skills a bit better than they have to, at least to start the season. Even though he's looked a lot better lately, as I mentioned, so maybe they're still they're starting to figure things out because I know Zion's been great lately as well and the Pelicans have looked better. So I guess, like, how hard should the Bulls go after Lonzo? Like, I would certainly give it a shot. Like, I just at this point I kind of want to see something different. Like we've seen, especially with this core now with the injuries, like I just kind of want something different to look at. So part of that is I think part of that goes into this equation here. So I think the Bulls should absolutely be looking at Lonzo Ball. Like I wouldn't want to give up too much for him because he's also got the RFA thing and you're gonna have to pay him as well. I honestly have no idea what his market will be like, but I think we talked about this last time recently, like, would you rather like pay Lowry or pay Lonzo at this point? Like, I kind of think I would just maybe take a shot with Lonzo instead of over the two, like even just like in a vacuum, just because they both have some big flaws, but I feel like Lonzo's fit just might be better with this team. I don't know. It is really tough just because they both have had their major issues, but what are your takes on the Bulls possibly going after Lonzo?
Yeah, I've always loved Lonzo. Yeah. I loved him as a draft prospect, and I think he's for sure been underwhelming in the league. He really just doesn't put any pressure on the rim, and that's totally handicapped him. This year, he's only taken 17% of his shots at the rim, which unreal. Is really pathetic. But he usually hits 60% of his shots at the rim, so he is a decent finisher. He's just not wired to attack, and really, he's just like not the type of power athlete that typically attacks the rim. With that being said, though, I think like the Lowry for Lonzo trade just has to be there. You would think it would be. Lowry he's having the best year of his career. I thought maybe the Bulls could get another asset out of the Pelicans because the Pelicans have all of these extra picks. They have the Lakers picks in the future that are obviously going to be super late. So, you know, I would probably offer that and see if they would do that in season, I think. The other thing you could do is try to just sign Lonzo as an RFA. In terms of overpaying him, like how much money would he get? I'm not totally sure how much money he would get, like probably 16, 17, 18 a year. And for his numbers, like his just raw point per game numbers, like that would seem like quite a bit of money. But the thing is that he's 23 years old and he's given you good defensive value. And I just feel like,
a player on their second contract typically isn't super overpaid. Like, we were worried Zach was going to be overpaid at 80 million, right? And he's clearly outperformed that contract without a doubt. So a player on their second contract, even if they're getting a little bit of a raise, and this year he's making 11 million as the former number two overall pick in the draft, I just think it's a worthy gamble. So I totally agree with you. I was thinking the same thing about just wanting to watch new guys. When I'm watching Felicio and Archie Diacono yesterday, I'm like, let me see some new guys fail at least. Like, that would be exciting. Yeah. And yeah, why not try to swing that trade? Like, I could be talked into like protecting the asset of Lowry and maybe trying to eventually do a sign and trade with him, signing Lonzo outright via cap space this summer, if they do have that ability, which I think they will, possibly depending on some of the options. But yeah, I think Lonzo would be a good player to target. I've always liked Lonzo. I would be really intrigued by his fit next to both Zach and Kobe. And I think he can give you, you know, sort of a connective tissue in the offense that the Bulls are very much missing right now.
Yeah. And like we say the Bulls need a point guard. They need that lead guard. Lonzo Ball is not that guy. Clearly we talk about, he can't put pressure on the rim enough. He just half court stuff. It's just not there. So he's not going to like totally all of a sudden fix that Bulls problem. But like you said, the connective tissue thing, he's a smart player, good passer. And they could use that. And if that 3-point shooting is real, and then you throw the defensive aspect in there, and that should just, I feel like just the fit there is makes some sense. And in terms of like the Lowry thing, like I wrote about this at Forbes after the injury earlier this week. I think it was yesterday. It's like how much longer can you really just like bank on this Lowry Wendell front court? Like they've been hurt. They've both been hurt every year. They both missed extended time. Like I know they're still young, but it's just like you just can't keep rolling with this when it's year after year the same thing, same issues happening. Like I know it's all like different injuries and all that stuff, but just like I just don't think you could commit to that, especially since they haven't had much success. That was kind of the secondary point. Like it'd be one thing if like they've been like really good together and just the injuries have been unfortunate. That in that kind of situation, you'd be willing to wait a bit longer. But when it's they haven't had much success together, and two of the 3 years since Carter came into the league, the Bulls have been smoked with the two together on the court. Last year, they basically broke even, but the offense was terrible. So the offense has been terrible with those two on the court all three seasons. So between that plus the injuries, it's just like I think you just got to look at probably shaking things up there with your front court and making another move to help that back court. If that's Lonzo Ball, if that's somebody else, it just seems like it's just got to be an option on the table there. It is unfortunate. I feel like we had high hopes for this Carter Markkanen front court. It just does not seem like it's going to really work out, which is, like I said, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, fully agree. I think you're seeing sort of Wendell's impact on the team, though, as he's been out, because he is just like leaps and bounds better than Daniel Gafford. I know that was a conversation among some people in the fan base for the start of the season. And Wendell has, in a lot of ways, been a little underwhelming, too, in his career. There's no doubt about it. He does not get a free pass from criticism. But, man, the Bulls are just a better team with him out there, I think. Like, the way he controls the game defensively, I still think is really underrated, even though it seems like he's been trying to, you know, slowly adjust to the new drop scheme. His impact defensively still far outweighs someone like Gafford or a lot of the other center minutes they're putting out there. So I would still like to see Wendell get a chance with this team long term. But to me, it's like Lowry really seems like he appears to be the guy that would get moved.
Yeah, and there were a few questions about that from our listeners at Tristan Gray asked us, do you think there's a chance of trading Lowry now that he's hurt? I mean, he should be back. He'll be back, hopefully, knock on wood, like that he'll be back in the next couple weeks and there'll still be time before the deadline. Even, I guess you could probably even trade him now. I mean, it's not like it's a long-term injury. As long as it's doesn't seem like it's that awful, like you could probably keep him in a deal right now. I feel like they should be shopping him for sure. The sign and trade idea you brought up, I think, is also interesting. Like, it would be ideal not to lose him for nothing. Like, I guess if you did lose him for nothing, like, it is what it is. But, like, ideally, you would be able to get something for him. So shop him now. If nothing is that great on the table, if the Lonzo thing doesn't happen, if you can't get, like, a late first or something, like, maybe you do look at that sign and trade. Or you do sign him, you match an offer sheet, and you look to trade him down the road. I don't know. It does definitely feel like they need to do something different with this front court. I'll use that to transition to this next question here. Someone asked about Patrick Williams and with Lowry out. This is from @KevinGabrowski4. He asked, with Lowry out, the Bulls have gone with Patrick Williams at the four. They could have started Thad there and left Pat at the three. What can we read into this? Do you think this is them acknowledging that Patrick Williams will be their long-term four? This is kind of something we did talk about when they drafted him, that we thought that he, at least you, especially coming to the league, you thought that he was more of a power forward in the NBA. The Bulls have been starting him at the three next to Wendell and Lowry when they've been healthy, and just at the three in general. So what do you make of them, the Bulls starting Patrick Williams at the four? Do you think they'll stick with that? Do you think that's what they think he will be long-term, with, and they'll go with like a smaller lineup, with if, whether it's Wendell at center, whether it's somebody else with Pat at the four, and then maybe go for try to find some better wings slash guards to bring in there next to him? Patrick Williams situation, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Patrick Williams has been awesome lately. I think
he has been good.
Like one of the strongest stretches of his career. You can just see the vision with him as a player, right? Yeah. I feel like he has so many potential outs to be a useful player. And some of his physicality just jumps off the screen. Like the height he gets on his jumps for mid-range shots, where he's been really good as a mid-range shooter this year, when he's challenging shots as a shot blocker, the way he gets off the floor, I think, is just really impressive. So you can totally see the vision there. I've always liked Pat closer to the basket than on the perimeter, because I do think he gives you some really interesting supplemental rim protection. And on the perimeter, I still think he has trouble, and a lot of rookies do, just like getting around screens and sort of holding his own on the perimeter. Like, I think
we saw Rui blow by him multiple times yesterday. That was definitely an issue.
Yeah, so I like him more as a four. I'm not sure if you really want to read too much into this, though, because I think they might just want to keep sort of the rhythm of Thad Young coming in off the bench, like Thad being the first sub, sort of running the offense through Thad when he gets on the floor. And I think that Billy Donovan loves Denzel Valentine for some reason. Like, he said he respected his game this week. Denzel's getting plenty of opportunities, 4 for 13 yesterday from the field, so in 28 minutes. Yeah, I think that, Pat probably long-term is a four in my opinion, but I wouldn't read too much into it just yet.
Yeah, I do really wonder, because I guess I don't want to take much from that Magic, that second Magic, and the Magic were awful, playing like a bunch of nobodies, and the Bulls like looked good in that game. Like, Denzel had a really nice game, Zach was killer, Patrick Williams was killer with the smaller lineup. Like, I do like the idea of it, though, just like, whoever's at center, whatever, you have Pat at the four, you have Zach at the two, if you can bring in a better point guard or something, and then you have another like athletic player at the three, or if you want to do a three guard lineup with Kobe, Zach, and whoever the another point guard is, and then you have Pat at the four and Wendell at the five, or somebody else, like that could be a fun closing lineup, or whoever you bring in there, whoever you draft this year, maybe something like that. Like that, I mean, I don't mind the sound of that, especially in this NBA with just being smaller, faster, more versatile. Like, it certainly seems like it wouldn't be a bad way to go. For right now, it definitely is, like, who knows if that's really what they're going with. They're just missing so many guys, and you don't want to play, if you don't want to play the guys like Felicio and stuff like that, and you mentioned keeping Thad on the bench. I don't think they want to overuse Thad either. Like, I mean, theoretically, like, if the Bulls were trying to win games, they'd be playing Thad Young, or, like, really trying to win, like, they'd be playing Thad Young, like, 35 to 40 minutes a night, but I don't think, at this point, he's 32. You don't want to overplay him that much, so I do kind of understand where they're coming from, but, yeah, I don't know. I guess then I will then use that to transition then as well into another question we got from our guy Mark at MK Hoops, just kind of talking about the balance of the starting lineups, which we did talk about a bit more. Like, do you think he had? Let me pull up the actual question that he had here. I had it listed here. How many more wins do the Bulls have if their starting unit wasn't just comprised of the young guys? Basically, if Sato and Otto, maybe even Thad, were starting, the Bulls avoid those early deficits, have more balanced on-off numbers, and possibly a better record. I'll start this, and they probably would. The Bulls have gotten off to some brutal starts. If you look at like all their top lineups, their starting lineups with all these core guys, they're all terrible. It's awful. And then once you put like Temple or Thad or Sato in there, like the lineups are looking a lot better, and the bench has been dominant. I mentioned that, like, that stat that somebody tweeted the other day about just the massive gap between the starters and the bench guys. It's the starters is the young core, basically, and then the bench has been the vets. But I think I do kind of understand why they're doing what they're doing, and someone else also kind of tying into this question thinks that maybe this is the right way to do this. Where the heck did that question go? That, like, maybe – that Billy's strategies the right way. This is from at Tom Naker, not sure. What if AK and Mark Evans had it right? What if the right move was to keep the same approach to starters, keeping them young versus bench vets? This does a few things. More experience for youth and accelerates development. 2, stealth tank and better shot at Cade Cunningham. And then 3, raise the vet trade value. I could kind of see like that kind of point there where you give your young guys the chance to grow together as a starting lineup, but then you have your bench guys, your vet bench guys kind of help stabilize things. I do think maybe there would be a point, obviously with guys hurt now, it's just kind of thrown up in the air, where it would have made sense to maybe insert one of the vet guys in there, whether that's Otto, like instead of Pat, and you bring Pat off the bench with the vets instead, maybe you do that. But in general, I do kind of understand why. Just you have the young guys grow together and you mix the vets in. And I think Billy has done a decent job trying to find that balance because he does close games with the vets. I mean, Temple and Thad are always out there closing games, usually with like Zach and Kobe, and then usually it's either Pat or Lowry or whoever's healthy there. Sometimes it's Otto. I do understand what Billy's trying to do and what they're trying to do here with this mixing and matching. So it is tough just because there has been such a drastic disparity there. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I think to answer Mark's question that they would definitely have a few more wins.
But yeah.
Then, you know, people would be like, well, why are we playing Satoransky 33 minutes right when we should be developing Kobe White? So you could see those arguments already happen. I think, you know, what do we hear after every season of the Garpax era? It's Paxson getting in front of a press conference and being like, well, we still don't know what we have in Jerian Grant. We're going to need another year to evaluate him. So I'm just hoping that, like, because we're starting Kobe White at point guard for 72 games this season, apparently.
We know what we have.
We're going to know what we have. And, of course, he's only 20 years old. And, you know, you can't make too definitive of a ruling on him. But I do think just, like, the ability to evaluate your own guys a little bit more could be a big upgrade from the last front office to this one. And I also think, like, if you are going to maybe trade Kobe White or trade some of these young guys – it probably looks a little bit better on paper just that they're starting. Like, if you look at Kobe's numbers, just his box score numbers in front of you, 15 points a game on 35% three-point shooting, like, it doesn't seem too terrible. And then you look at the fact that he's already got all this starting experience at only 20 years old. Obviously, if you're, you know, doing a deeper dive into the team and into his play, it's been a huge sore spot all season long. But, yeah, I think that, to me, I don't hate the starting lineup. I think the one move is Satoransky over Kobe. If you wanted to do that, if you just wanted to say, hey, Kobe, we're going to put you in a position to succeed right now, and we're going to worry about developing your point guard skills down the line, that would be the one move I would make over taking Pat out of the lineup, because I think Pat looks like he belongs much more than Kobe does. Maybe it's because he's not playing on the ball and he's not such a high usage guy, but yeah, Satoransky for Kobe would probably be the one I would maybe make. But I also don't have a huge problem with Kobe starting.
Yeah, same. I do want to bring up with the point guard thing, and we talked about Lonzo already, that there was a rumor out there that Lonzo, this is from Matt Moore, the Action Network, rumored that that Lonzo wants to come to the Bulls, which is kind of interesting. So I totally forgot to bring that up when we were talking about Lonzo, and I wanted to make sure we got that in there, that especially now we're talking about Kobe White in the point guard spot still. That, like, supposedly Lonzo wants to come to the Bulls, according to Matt Moore of the Action Network. And he did a piece over there just talking about the options. He also, besides Lowry, like, we didn't totally answer some of the other possible trade, like, options there for, like, if, I mean, would you trade Thad for Lonzo? Like, I don't know. I know he brought up Otto Porter as well, who's, you'd have to take back some more salary there. And I don't know what are the Pelicans going to do with Otto? Like, we can talk about this a bit more, that we got a question about, like, the vets and what they can get for him. But I guess let's kind of do that there right now. Looking at the vets, we talked about this vet, young guy, like, disparity. If the Bulls do look at trading the vets, what they should do, what can the Bulls get back for them? What can the Bulls get back for Thad Young? What, like, at Otto, like, can they even get anything back for Otto right now since he's hurt? You can't rely on him. He's making $28 million. And then you look at a guy like Garrett Temple. Like, Garrett Temple's 2 of his last 23 on threes. He's regressed real hard to that mean after his hot start. And then obviously Sato as well as a possible another trade guy, but, like, do you really want to trade that Sato if you're starting Kobe White? Like, you think you'd want to have maybe I mean, if you trade Lonzo, that would open the door to maybe trade Sato instead, but or get Sato out here and maybe try to get an asset there. But I mean, I think the main guy we're looking at is Thad Young. So, like, what can you get for Thad Young? Would you include him in a trade for Lonzo? Would you try to get a first-round pick? I always come back to, like, that Boston Celtics thing. We've mentioned this multiple times. Celtics have the massive Gordon Hayward trade exception. They have all their first-round picks, I believe, and then they have a bunch of extra second-round picks. They have some young guys who could be maybe interesting, like Nesmith they drafted this year. I think Romeo Langford is hurt. Like, they drafted him first-round last year. They have some whatever. They have – like they have Robert Williams there, Grant Williams, the both those guys I think get rotation minutes. They have some interesting young guys, plus all these draft picks, plus that trade exception to easily just that they could take that into. So like I guess like Thad should probably get a first the way he's playing now. I would think even if it's not going to be like a lottery first, but like you should probably like be able to get a late first for Thad at this point, right?
Yeah, I would think so, especially because you have control over him next year too.
Yeah, like, right. Partially guaranteed deal.
So that's also an option if a team wants to get rid of him. So, yeah, I would think that the contract structure makes him more valuable. His play has been awesome. And, you know, when we were talking about, like, the late game crunch time fails, the one thing I wanted to say was, like, LaVine, just get the ball to Thad. And Thad will make the right decision, right? Like, when they let Thad control the game, he's been amazing. And, yeah, I think that, you know, for sure, if you could trade him, I'd trade him. He's, what, 32 years old? If he's on the team next year, like he is really good, but it's like, you know, are you even going to bring him back or are you going to unguarantee the contract to create more cap space? So it's an interesting question. I think it's a no-brainer to trade him. Boston seems like a natural fit because they actually have a pick they could trade. Someone threw out, I think Stefan threw out there today, the Nuggets is a possible. Yep. Team, so that would be potentially be a good one. And yeah, there's just a lot of teams. Like the Kings are seventh in the playoffs right now. Like, do the Spurs need an extra big man? So you could really just go down the line, and there should hopefully be one team that'll give up their pick for him. But you never totally know. So it'll be interesting. And then I feel like Otto could really help a contender. Like Otto would be a godsend for a Nuggets team that has zero wings. Whatsoever. I think he'd be really good in Portland too, even though Portland has Covington now and they have a little bit more help on the wing, but I think he'd be good there. So his big salary at $28 million a year makes finding a trade for him really difficult, but I would love to see both those guys moved. I think that would be a great start to the Karnišovas era, just in terms of building your asset base up a little bit. You know, his pick of Patrick Williams was totally unconventional, but looks like, you know, it looks really good up to this point. You don't want to, you know, make any sweeping assumptions after 40% of the season, not even when he's 19 years old. But it looks like a good pick to this point. So, yeah, I think try to get more draft picks, try to get more assets, maybe try to get a young player. Some of those guys you named on the Celtics would be really interesting. I've always loved Grant Williams. I don't think they would give him up in a trade.
I don't think
Thad,
so.
But, you know, Langford, too, I think would be interesting, even though I've never been super high on him. But yeah, there should be some, if you get a young piece, cool, or a late first, great.
Yeah, I just don't, what is his value? This man, he can't play. Like, is a team going to give up anything for you for a guy who might not even play, or who plays, like, every other game? Like, it's just so frustrating with him, because he is good. Like, when he plays, he is legitimately a really good player, so just, like you said, he's, like, the oldest 27-year-old there is. His back thing now is just nagging him. Who knows when he's back? Like, it's a really frustrating situation with Otto Porter Jr. I don't know. It's annoying. We have mentioned the Nets as well for Thad Young. Was the Nets. Nets just added Bulls legend Noah Vonleh to their roster. They signed him yesterday. They badly need some depth there. Their bench is not any good. They were playing like Reggie Perry, I think, some minutes in the front court. So we'll see if Vonleh gets some minutes there for former Bull who was in training camp this year. We've got just a few questions left here. Wrap it up. We don't want to go too long. I guess kind of talking about the end of the bench and the fact that they had Noah Vonleh on the team last year. This question was, let me pull it up again, from the main gist of it was basically like, something that we talked about during the offseason where the Bulls did not have that much activity was basically about should the Bulls have been more active with the end of their bench. This is from at Craft Beer, so shy. He said, so far, Bulls front office is connected on most of the organizational changes, but my one knock so far is the decision on final roster composition, a.k.a. keeping Felicio, keeping Luke Kornet, instead of a guy like Noah Vonleh. Hindsight 2020, but do you think they regret this move, especially given injuries to Lowry and Wendell? I think maybe. The Noah Vonleh thing was weird because He obviously, I think he tested positive for COVID, and they basically cut him right after that. So it was just like, with the timing with training camp and the season starting, which is really kind of weird. But like, I would rather have probably, I know Novell is not really any good, and he's played with a bunch of teams. I guess he was okay with the Knicks a few years ago, but like, I'd rather have Novell in the roster than what is Luke Kornet doing on this roster? This was one of the things we talked about coming into the season. While we weren't that like upset with them, like not making any big moves, why were some of these like bums on the end of their bench? Why is Luke Kornet here? Why is Felicio there? I understand Felicio because he's got whatever $7-8 million contract. Maybe use that in a trade for somehow. So whatever with them, but like, why is Luke Kornet on this roster? Why haven't they maybe tried to cycle through and bring in another young guy or something? Like, I'd have to look and see who's actually out there. Like, I mean, but there's always guys you can take a chance on and give minutes to. But again, at the end of this roster with Kornet, with Arch, with Hutches, like, we don't know what's going on with Hutch now. There's a lot of dead weight at the back end of this roster. And when you're a rebuilding team like this, that now with these injuries again, like, it'd be nice to see guys that maybe diamond in the rough type guys that could have a future on your team. But we got just dead weight on the end of the roster. Like, so I think that is something that was a critique going into the season, and it's kind of bearing out.
Yeah, dude, I can't wait till we can get some new guys on the end of the roster. And it's so weird. It's almost like there was something coming down from ownership that told Karnishovas, like, not to do anything with this roster because, you know, like, get rid of Archie Diacono. Like, how do you not have a more interesting developmental guard in there besides for Archie Diacono, who, like, I'm sure he's, like, a good culture guy and he's low maintenance, yeah, and you can put him in there and he's not going to mess up too badly when he has to play in a pinch, but like, those roster spots just need to be going to players with higher ceilings and like any sort of potential upside. And, you know, we mentioned Dotson a little bit earlier. I would love to see Dotson playing already. I would love to see him have one of those bench spots. Maybe that will happen. I don't know if this season continues to slip further and further away. But given what Kobe has produced so far, like, it's almost impossible for Dotson to be worse than what our starting point guard has been thus far. So, yeah, it's kind of just what I have on that.
It was something we talked about for a while before the year, and it's kind of bearing out now. It's just kind of annoying. We had a question from Adam House. Sorry if I'm saying his name wrong. How's it too? We know he loves Derrick Rose, so he asked the question: with the Knicks trading for Derrick Rose, should the Bulls have made a play for him? This was also a conversation on Bloggable, since, I mean, it cost the Pistons, or the Knicks, Dennis Smith Jr. and a second round pick. Like, with the Bulls' issues at point guard, should the Bulls have tried to bring in Derrick Rose back for a reunion?
I'm just going to say no. Just move on. That's the best thing you could do, right? And I guess it'll be cool to see Rose with Tibbs, but yeah, I don't think they should have.
Yeah, he said, should I finally just let that dream wither and die? And I would guess yes. Like, it just does not feel like there's really any reason. And he's, especially on this rebuilding team, like, I think the Rose thing, that ship has probably sailed. Like, I think he probably could help. He's still decent. I know this year has been kind of a mess for him in the Pistons, but like, try something else at point guard. I don't think really Derrick Rose is the answer. Like, I don't even understand why the Knicks did it besides
he was
Tom Thibodeau's there.
Well, yeah, they didn't give anything up, so.
Yeah. It was basically free. Like, yeah, hope that it won't, like, take minutes from Emmanuel quickly. Maybe he's just, like, taking, like, Austin Rivers minutes. I know he's might be in the trade block. Maybe they trade Alfred
Payton's minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, whatever. It's just kind of a weird trade. I thought maybe an actual contender, but the Knicks are going to go for that playoff spot and try to get Tom Thibodeau. We knew that was going to happen. I still think maybe Bulls-Knicks playing is still alive. We'll see, but so I definitely, to answer that question, I think probably the Derrick Rose thing is probably not going to happen. Maybe later in his career, but like, I don't know if AK is like really into any of that. I mean, he's not, doesn't really have any attachment there, so I'd be hard to see that actually happen.
So like, the Eastern Conference standings right now are Hornets 6, Hawks 7, Raptors 8, Knicks 9, Cavs 10. So like, if the play-in tournament is like Cavs, Knicks, Hawks, Hornets, Tibbs is totally winning the play-in tournament. There's nothing that would be more Tibbs than winning the play-in tournament and getting the Knicks to the playoffs in his first year. I mean, Tibbs got the goddamn Timberwolves to the playoffs. Of course he's going to get the Knicks to the playoffs. So I love this. This will be one of the best storylines to watch late in the season, is Tibbs in the play-in tournament, treating it like it is truly Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and that's going to be wonderful.
And you mentioned the Hornets. LaMelo Ball looking real hot for those Charlotte Hornets. Yeah. So that's a lot of fun. Not looking back on it, if those Wendell for number four, as we like Patrick Williams, I think it was a good pick at number four since they took it. Trading up to get LaMelo at number two probably would have been looked real nice given Kobe White's struggles. But yeah. I don't want to think too much about that because Patrick Williams does look good. We both like him. I think he's going to be a good player, but. LaMelo has been awesome, a lot of fun. Since he moved into the starting lineup, he's been incredible. And the Hornets they have some excitement there. And they're up, like you said, I think they're up to the sixth seed now. They've won a few games in a row, and they look a lot of fun. I guess final two questions here. This is from at Hey, my name is long underscore. What would Laurie, Kobe, Wendell with three picks and three swaps get you? Is that like a, would that get you Bradley Beal?
Can you repeat that one more time?
Lowry, Kobe, Wendell, three picks, three pick swaps. Who is that getting you? that's basically.
Honestly, you could probably get Beal for that, right? Like that is just a ton of picks.
That's a lot.
If any team was going to offer the Bulls that for LaVine, it would be hard to say no to that. And I'm not someone who like wants to trade LaVine. Really, I would like LaVine to be here long term, but. I mean, that's just a huge package. Think about what the Bulls got for Jimmy Butler. They got one swap. So, yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that maybe you could get Beal on that. Maybe.
Yeah. We know the Wizards, they don't want to trade him. He says he doesn't want to be traded. I feel like that's going to come to a head at some point where he's going to actually want out. And we talked last time about – I think it would be – I know maybe it's not the most natural fit with Beal and LaVine, but I think the Bulls could put a decent package together if they really wanted to for Beal. And I mean, at this point, I think you're looking at – you probably keep Zach – unless another team puts a huge offer on the table, you have Patrick Williams, and then everybody else can be whatever. You put together a big offer for another star, whether it's Beal, whether it's that next star who wants out, like all these other guys should be available on the table. Obviously, I don't think that's really going to happen. We'll probably see one or two of these guys move in a smaller trade. We've obviously talked about Lowry a bit already, but besides Zach, I don't want to say anybody's untouchable. Nobody's truly untouchable on this roster. Zach and Patrick Williams are probably pretty close. If you get the right offer, you do it, but. So I guess we will finish on Zach here. This last question was, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, like how high is the ceiling of a team having LaVine as your best player if you build around him with decent vets? What do you guys think about the fact that LaVine's net rating is still negative due to his terrible defense? So I kind of mentioned the ceiling thing. Like if you like had like a bunch of Thad Youngs, just a bunch of nice players around Zach LaVine, he's getting you 25 to 30 points a game. Oh, what? You probably a second round exit, maybe first round type team. The defense still is an issue. He brought up the net rating thing. Like the on-off splits are not great. I would say with LaVine's case, like I wonder how much of that is him playing with just all the young guys. I don't know. Like the defense is still a problem. If you look at the Kobe Zach splits together, the defense is just like absolutely atrocious. I mentioned they're probably the worst defensive backcourt in the league. So there's always just going to be that issue with the defense and some of that decision making with Zach, why he can't probably be the best player in your championship team. But if you do like put like some solid vets around him, like if you were playing like Thad Young and a solid veteran point guard, and then a couple other shooters, and maybe whether it's Wendell or decent defensive center, I could see a team that could be maybe top five, four, five in the East, and maybe be a second round team. I don't think any further than that. You got to get another star in there for sure. But I think the conversation around Zach has kind of shifted, and I think a lot of people. Even people who used to kind of be down on him, like I think I wouldn't say we were ever like totally down on him, but just had major questions about him, have really come to appreciate him a lot more. And while we know still that maybe not a number one on a finals team or a championship team, he could still be a really good complimentary piece to that one, like whatever alpha dog type player. You do wonder like if they do keep him, they max him out, and the Bulls do get another like stud in there, like how they mesh, because we do know Zach likes controlling the ball a lot, especially in big minute or in big moments down the stretch. Like, but he seems like if there actually was another good player, like I feel like he'd figure it out. He's a hard worker. I think he's a good dude. He seems like a good teammate. So like I think he'd be able to figure it out. So yeah. What is your take on that?
My take on this is. So I agree with basically your ceiling on what a team with Zach LaVine as its best player would look like at its peak.
But the goal should not be to surround Zach LaVine with solid role players. It should be to get a player better than Zach LaVine.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that, like, while LaVine for sure has been the best player on the team this year, like, there are definitely times where it feels like Thad is more valuable. And I think that having a big man who he can play off of, who especially is a passing hub, the way Thad has been able to be a passing hub this year, would just be really good for the team to try to replicate moving forward. Like, if you're definitely going to trade Thad within the next month and a half, but LaVine is a guy you're going to sign to another contract, you saw how good the Zach and Thad two-man game was, and I would like to sort of try to see them replicate that with just a younger, higher upside player than Thad Young in terms of someone who whose skill set could sort of be as a hub of an offense. Now, as I say this, of course, we would always talk about Wendell Carter being that guy. Yeah. He hasn't really shown it at all. So
there have been some improvements this year. His assist percentage is up. He's up over like 2 assists per game, and just the percentage I think has doubled from last year. But still, like, he's still too hesitant at times. Sometimes he gets in his own head. Like, he could learn a lot from watching Thad Young. The ball gets to Thad, and he makes such quick decisions. He has had some turnover issues this year, but in general, like, Thad gets the ball in the middle of the court, and he's whipping the ball to the opposite corner or to find cutters under the basket. Like, that kind of quick decision making has been huge for the Bulls offense, and definitely Wendell can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, this is kind of how I thought Wendell would be at his peak when the Bulls drafted him, was playing like Thad is playing right now. So yeah, I don't know. I think that you absolutely got to try to get another player next to Zach who's better than him still. And that's even if you do sign him to a $35 million a year contract. Like, who cares? There's still tons of other avenues to acquire a guy who is superior to him. So I think absolutely do that. And yeah, I think that, you know, the fit of that player will be interesting. But Zach has played so much on the ball to this point in his career because he's had to. So if he had someone else to play off of, like, I think he could be a really dynamic off-ball player. Absolutely. We haven't seen it yet, but.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, I think he would buy into the role, too. I think he'd probably like – I know he likes having the ball in his hands at the end of games, but I feel like he'd probably like having someone else really good to play with, just, like, so he wouldn't have to do anything, and he's never won. Like, the guy talks about he wants to win, and, like, if you bring in another stud, like, you'll win a lot more games, like – I like his attitude a lot. I've come around a lot in him, just a lot in general. Like, he's a really likable player. I do hope in general, the Bulls keep him, unless you, again, Godfather offer, you can't refuse, you make the trade. But, like, in general, pro Zach LaVine, I hope they keep him around and they could find another stud to pair with him, maybe another couple studs that the Bulls can actually build a winning roster again. For right now, we'll wrap it up here. It has been ugly for Bulls basketball this last week or two, and it might not get much better. I mentioned we got the Pelicans Wednesday night, Clippers Friday night, and I think we got like Pacers, Hornets coming up as well. Just the rest of this first half of the season with these injuries now, like, could get pretty rough. Hopefully they can keep it competitive. Hopefully Zach keeps doing his thing, and I guess that's all we can hope for. And then hopefully they do make some moves. Obviously, again, we got about a month and a half coming up until that trade deadline, so there is some time. But hopefully the rumor mill starts really heating up again. We'll see if anything happens with Lonzo Ball. But we'd definitely like to see some action after the quiet offseason, especially with the season going the way it is right now. Because we don't want to lose – like, we don't want it to go the way the last couple of years. I mentioned how yesterday it was like the last couple of years. Like, I don't want to lose interest in this Bulls season a third or halfway through. Like, I want to be able to watch this team have something to root for the rest of the season, whether it's new players, whether it's them playing better, whatever. I just want to not lose interest in a Bulls season like we've done like the last 3-4 years since the Jimmy trade. So hopefully that does happen. We'll see how they fare against the New Orleans Pelicans tomorrow night. Again, that's Lonzo coming to town. Zion will be fun to watch. Brandon Ingram is a good player. Pelicans are an interesting team. They're looking a bit better lately, so we will see. Thank you to everybody for sending in the questions to us. Always appreciate that. I think we got to almost all of them, so again, thank you very much. Shout out, as always, to the Blue Wire Network. Go listen to all the other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. We got a bunch of great NBA pods, NFL pods. Obviously, the Super Bowl just finished, but the offseason will be coming up there, and then we have a bunch of other good pods as well for us at Cast Considerations. You obviously sent in your questions for this time. You know where to find us on Twitter at Bulls_J, at SPN_Ricky. Always willing to answer your questions on Twitter, and always hit us up if you have any questions, concerns, ideas for us to talk about. Please do that. And obviously give us your review us wherever you listen to your podcast. We're all over the place, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all those good places. So for Jason and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We'll talk to you guys next time.